You're tuned in to the Grace Curley Show podcast. Listen to Grace live daily before Howie's show. For station and time, go to gracecurleyshow.com. Enjoy.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to this beautiful Monday afternoon. And lucky for us, this show, Taylor, I gotta say, it's at a really great time of day because we tend to get just enough highlights from Press Secretary Jen Psaki, but we don't have enough to really overwhelm people right off the bat. I think the standout video of the day, as far as Jen Psaki, the circleback queen, is concerned, has to be a question from who else but the one horse pony, Peter Ducey. This is a question about jobs and green energy and the Keystone Pipeline.
Through the course of the week. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jen. I do have a question on COVID, but first on energy. When is it that the Biden administration is going to let the thousands of fossil fuel industry workers, whether it's pipeline workers or construction workers, who are either out of work or will soon be out of work because of a Biden EO, when it is and where it is that they can go for their green job? And that is something the administration has promised. There is now a gap. So I'm just curious when that happens, when those people can count on that.
Well, I'd certainly welcome you to present your data of all the thousands and thousands of people who won't be getting a green job. Maybe next time you're here, you can present that.
But you said that they would be getting green jobs, so I'm just asking when that happens. Richard Trumka, who is a friend, longtime friend of Joe Biden, says about that day one Keystone EO, he says, I wish he, the president, had paired that more carefully with the thing that he did second by saying, here's where we are creating the jobs.
I find, and I just saw this on Twitter, Molly Hemingway tweeted that for someone who's getting very few tough questions, or I wouldn't even say tough, just fair questions, she's not handling it particularly well. She gets very sassy and kind of passive aggressive. Why don't you present it if you have that information? Like, this is your job. It's not Peter Ducey's job to get up there and explain his question to you with like data and stuff. Just answer the question, yes or no. Or do you have the answer? And a lot of times she says you can check with the DOJ, you can check with this branch, you can check with that branch. But this idea that she doesn't have to answer the questions or that it's stupid of these reporters to actually ask these questions just shows the level of arrogance and really how much this entire team has gotten away with up to this point. They are not ready. And I wrote a column months and months and months ago about Biden and his whole team of staffers. And I said, there's something to be said for getting beat up in the process. And I'm speaking, obviously, figuratively, getting beat up in the process of campaigning and, you know, politics ain't beanbag. And that's, there's a reason that expression exists. And Trump got beat up so often from everyone, from every angle, about every single thing, whether it was the ketchup on his steak or the Diet Coke he was drinking or the show he was watching or what he was tweeting or, you know, all sorts of things. But it did create a guy who could take more and could handle it and would get angry and fight back. But he wasn't coddled by the press. And I often thought, I don't think they're helping Joe Biden as much as they think they are. By not getting him groomed to answer any sort of question, they're really setting him up for disaster. And we're seeing that. And even in a press secretary who is far more with it than Joe Biden, she's ultra sensitive to any sort of question that she does not think is about Air Force One colors or Joe Biden's dog or how bad Trump is. Any question like that, she really, really does not like. And it's telling that that is her reaction. Like, oh, I welcome you to present this information. I'm telling you, I don't know, Taylor. I don't know how long Peter Ducey's going to have that seat in the press room.
Hopefully for a long time. I don't think they'll be revoking his, that's news they don't want. But it's very territorialistic watching Jen Psaki in these press briefings compared to Kayleigh McEnany, especially when the Trump administration is brought up in the room. Like, they definitely go on the defense and actually attack back at, they lash back at the reporters, as we just heard. And she does it countless times a week.
Yeah, and she does it in a real kind of smarmy way, you know?
It's like they're too focused on who was just there, and it really irks them. And yeah. And she has something to prove.
Yes, yes, no, I would totally agree with all that. But it's a return to normalcy. I do want to talk a little bit about the Biden administration, because we have a lot of sound here and a lot of stories. Obviously, we played you guys that incredibly important PSA from the good Dr. Jill about wearing your mask in while you're walking your dog. But I also want to play some Dr. Fauci here. He made news today for saying what Trump has been saying forever, that he wants to open schools up. Now, you'll remember, and we had a caller point this out on Friday, Trump was one of the first people to say, listen, we cannot have the cure be worse than the disease. And one of those issues was for kids, because they were not getting sick. The transmission rate was very low. And it didn't seem to make sense to really pull them out of school. And I'm not being dramatic when I say change their lives for the worse in a major way. I mean, and I'm going to read you guys a piece here from Carol Markowitz, who I'm a big fan of. But she wrote a piece about not just the kids who are affected by this, but women. Where are the feminists who are coming forward and saying this is not a fair burden to put on mothers who also have careers? They can't send their kids to school. The kids are at home. They're suffering at work. It's really it's depressing, but it's an interesting thing to look at. Where are these feminists who claim to care so much about women? I do want to play this first sound from Dr. Fauci, though, because every day he has a new idea, and this is cut 20.
We want to get the schools K-8 open within the next 100 days, all of them. You want to be the first to open, the last to close.
And this is cut 21, Dr. Fauci.
There have been a number of studies to show that when you have children that are a certain age, namely above 8 and 8th grade and higher, that they transmit as easily as adults transmit. Whereas younger children, even though they have virus in their nasopharynx when they get infected, they do not transmit as readily. So for that reason, you want to focus on that group, the K-8 group. But there are some data that suggests that.
Now, Taylor Cormier is my producer today, and he was nice enough to pull an old clip of President Trump. Taylor, when is this from?
This is from last May.
Okay, let's play. This is Trump on school openings.
I think that we have to open our schools. Young people are very little affected by this. We have to get the schools open. We have to get our country open. We have to open our country. Now, we want to do it safely, but we also want to do it as quickly as possible. We can't keep going on like this. I mean, you're going to have you're having bedlam already in the streets. You can't do this. We have to get it open. I totally disagree with him on schools.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that Trump was right on with that? I wonder if Dr. Fauci will issue an apology for, you know, giving Trump such a hard time for wanting to open schools. I really, really do hope to see schools opening. I think people are getting completely, completely depressed, and kids are getting really behind. I mean, I got to tell you, Taylor, if I was at home as a little kid and my school was on a computer, first of all, there was 4 kids in my family, it would have been complete mayhem. There is no chance I would have been sitting there for 8 hours.
I did an online course in college. And as a grown adult, I didn't have the attention span for it. I flunked it.
It's tough. You get bored, and it's not natural.
No, it wasn't tough. I was just lazy. But yeah, you get bored very easily. You find yourself not paying attention to. Actually, we didn't even have video. It was just all reading. It was bad.
I was talking to a friend of mine this past weekend, and she was talking. She's a fourth grade teacher, and she was talking about remote learning, and she said, It's just so bizarre. Like the parents are walking by in the background with their robes on, and then there's loud noises everywhere, and the kids are, you know, they're on mute, then they're not on mute, then they're chiming in when they're not supposed to be. It's just complete chaos. And meanwhile, she's just trying to teach them like the gravity or something like that, like just one thing, and nobody can focus. Kids are telling her about my hamster, and she's like, not now, not now. She said it's just totally brutal, and she feels really bad for the kids.
So
because
I guess part of the new normal is they're talking about having kids back in the classrooms while keeping a certain percentage of them home. So it's like a rotating virtual classroom. They call them the Zoomers and the Roomers.
Oh, gosh. Make it stop. Make it stop. I don't mean to make light of it because I feel so bad for these kids. I mean, you always didn't like school, you know, like, I don't want to go to school today, but I loved school. Like, really, when I look back, when you're in fourth and fifth grade, that's when you have the best time with your friends. And all these kids have been home for months and months and months. And if your kid's in third grade or fourth grade, they're supposed to be learning big time stuff like multiplication tables. You cannot be happy about this. And then you got people like Joy Behar who go, why don't they just repeat the year? It's nothing to her. Like, just repeat the year. Okay, Joy. Well, President Behar, that's a great idea. Guys, when we get back, I'll take your calls on this. I also want to read you the this piece by Carol Markowitz. It's called Feminists Are Missing in Action as Anti-Science School Closings Brutally Slam Women. I do not have any kids, but I do have to say I've heard a lot of stories from moms who are at home with all their kids also trying to work, and no one is having a good time in those situations. My friends at Eden Pure have done it again, and for as long as supplies last, Thunderstorm air purifiers will come with a free Kennedy Babylon by Howie Carr. That's right. Buy one Thunderstorm air purifier and get Kennedy Babylon for free. It's been months, and people still ask me if it really works. Taylor can tell you. I know you use it in your house as well, Taylor.
I've got two in the basement, one on the man cave side, one on the laundry room side, and you wouldn't notice a difference between the two rooms because they smell the same, which is no odor at all.
And I like the fact Taylor brings up the basement because no matter how, you know, nice your basement is, it's easy to get a weird smell down there.
It's an older house. There may be a crack in the foundation or something. You just don't know. And, you know, the people that lived there before, you don't know if they left anything in the rafters or anything like that.
Right. So all you have to do is you take your Thunderstorm air purifier. It's small. I'm holding it up in my hand right now. It's really small. One of the reasons I like it is because sometimes you buy these things, first of all, they can be huge. They can be like over $600, which I don't know anyone who wants to spend over $600 on an air purifier. But also, a lot of times you have to buy air filters, and then you end up having to, you know, it's a lot of work, and I'm a lazy person. I know Taylor, he failed his Zoom class. He's a lazy person as well. We love these because you plug it in and then you're done with it. The Eden Pure air purifier can handle pet, kitchen, tobacco, or that damp basement smell. Go to EdenPure.com and put in code word GRACEBOOK. The free book is while supplies last, so grab yours today. Some listeners found the offer over the weekend before we started it, so it is moving fast. EdenPure.com, code word GRACEBOOK. Shipping is free. We'll be back on the other side with your calls, 844-500-4242. What do you think of all of this remote learning and do you think it's unfair to the moms at home who are trying to work their jobs and teach the kids at the same time? We'll be back on the other side. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
We were planning to open the restaurants in New York City 25% indoor dining on Valentine's Day. They have made the point that they'd like to open a couple of days earlier so they can be ready for Valentine's Day, get the staff oriented, get supplies into the restaurants. And that's a reasonable request. So we'll start indoor dining on Friday.
How nice of King Cuomo. He sounds a little bit like he knows now that he's no longer America's favorite governor. His voice sounds a little sad. Well, I guess Janice Dean, the weather girl, as I believe one of his spokesperson or someone called her, must be having a fun time listening to him try to, I don't know, eat a little bit of humble pie. That's all we ask. We don't ask for much. So I was talking about this feminist movement and how they're missing in action during all of this learning from home and the shutdown of our schools. But first, today's poll question is brought to you by the Follinsbee Inn. There are only three rooms left. I originally thought there were seven. I was incorrect. There are three rooms available for my listener weekend getaway beginning Friday, February 19th. This is a great Valentine's gift. To reserve your room, go to FallensBeIn.com. Go there fast. I think these will be sold out by the end of the show. That's FallensBeIn.com. Taylor Cormier is on the board. What is the poll question, Taylor, and what are the results thus far?
Will the Tampa Bay Buccaneers be invited to the White House?
I'm really going towards no, because I'm seeing more and more stories about how Tom Brady was out hugging and kissing people on the field, and you know, other people were hugging, no masks, and it was the maskers are not going to be happy with it. So I'm going to say no.
Does your no include the possibility for a virtual White House invitation?
See, that is interesting. I could see something virtual. If that counts as inviting, I will say yes.
38% say no, they won't be invited to the White House. I would say a virtual invitation does not count as going to the White House.
Okay, then I'm on that side. I mean, I'm sure Biden, it's an easy out for him. Like, this is, I was talking to someone the other day and they said COVID, and I'm not downplaying the sickness and, you know, that for some people it's very dangerous. But for most people, like our age and stuff, a person said to me, COVID can be anything you want it to be. Like, if you don't want to go to your sister's dinner party, I'm a little nervous about COVID.
Yeah, you start asking, well, how many people are going to be there?
Yeah,
I'm Do I know him? Has he come into contact with anybody?
Is he a super spreader? His name, he sounds like he'd be a super spreader.
Are we all sharing the cake as individual cupcakes?
That restaurant is very known for tapas, and I don't really want to be sharing small plates with everyone, so I'm going to have to pass. It really is, like, depending on the convenience factor, it can be whatever you want it to be. So I think convenience-wise, Joe Biden's going to use COVID as an excuse to not get himself involved with Tom Brady.
Well, he's already set the precedent, too. Joe Biden is that you shouldn't be traveling at this. And he's come out and said that. And even Peter Ducey last week asked Jen Psaki, well, he said he shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't be traveling, especially on planes, yet he's going to Delaware for the weekend. So I think that question would be asked by Peter Ducey again if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were invited to the White House.
God bless that one horse pony soldier. Guys, I am going to read a little bit from this, and just a heads up, we're going to have Dave Seminara on next. He wrote a piece, speaking of Tom Brady, where he said he no longer hates Tom Brady, and he's going to tell us why. Maybe he can make a convert out of Taylor. Maybe by the end of the segment, Taylor will be a TB12 fan as well. So here's the New York Post story. Feminists are MIA as anti-science school closings brutally slam women. As the National Women's Law Center notes, although net jobs lost hit 140,000 nationwide, women lost 156,000 jobs while men actually gained 16,000. Even more female workers may have felt forced to voluntarily give up their jobs to be home looking after their kids exiled from their school buildings at the behest of powerful teachers' unions. Oh, and as CNN reports, the job losses hit Black and Hispanic women disproportionately. Feminists are supposed to care about minorities along with women, aren't they? The giant roof-busting elephant in the room. Women have been hit especially hard by the pandemic, in large part because school in many major American cities has all but ceased to exist. And yet that deafening sound no one hears is the tragic silence of a feminist movement that has chosen to side with teachers' unions instead of with women throughout the country who are bearing the brunt of those school closures. This is Carol Markowitz from the New York Post, and I'm skipping around. The New York Times just ran several pieces about the struggles of mothers, but largely avoided the schools. The feminist magazine Miss has barely touched the topic of shuttered schools, except when it was used to criticize the Donald Trump administration for daring to push for their opening. In December, Miss featured a piece that did note that school closures are having devastating effects on gender equity. But instead of arguing for their opening, the piece argued for the closing of businesses. This should be feminism's movement. Activists on behalf of women should be screaming their heads off that we must follow the science and open the schools. They can note that it's only public schools in large American cities that have decided to forego schooling. Instead, these supposed champions for women sit silently by as moms crumble in the face of all that is expected of them. Couldn't have said it better myself. We'll be back on the other side, everybody, with Dave Seminara. This is The Grace Curley Show.
live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you so much for joining us. I have a little lighter topic to talk about right now. If you go to gracecurlyshow.com, you can check out the latest column by Dave Seminara. It is titled, I No Longer Hate Tom Brady. It's hard for me to even say it because I don't even understand how someone could hate Tom Brady, but that's why we're bringing Dave on here. So, Dave, you, first of all, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Grace. You don't understand how someone could hate Tom Brady. Have you ever been to Buffalo, Grace?
I have not. And if you keep up that attitude, I will never go to Buffalo.
You got to come.
No, so break it down, Dave.
A lot of Buffalo haters, like a million of them or so.
Break down. You've been a Bills fan for more than 40 years. And break down the amount of times and what you watch Tom Brady do to your team.
Do I have to? Okay. He beat us 32 times, Grace, over a period of 19 years. So you could imagine. And we beat him three times. So that's I'm not a math major, but that's a pretty lopsided ratio there. And, you know, you beat the team 32 times, and many of those 32 losses were blowouts. And he also insulted us once, too.
Yeah, tell people about that.
He was talking about his father. Well, this was years ago, but, of course, we're in Buffalo. We sort of have an inferiority complex. I don't live there anymore, but my family is all still there. And, you know, we have a bit of a chip on our shoulder because people are always taking cheap shots at us. And Brady was trying to say, basically, how loyal a fan his dad was. And his illustration, his example of this was, my dad even goes to the games in Buffalo. And he said, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Buffalo before, but the hotels there are really bad, or something on those lines. Like, he insulted our hotels, which you're like, oh, man, low blow.
I don't know if you guys have ever been to the hotels in Buffalo. They're not the nicest places in the world, but he would still travel to those games. I could kind of see how that might rub you the wrong way.
Ouch. You know, it wouldn't if he was talking about some city that was already very self-confident, maybe not. But we're a little edgy in Buffalo, I got to admit, because we've been ragged on for so long, you know? We're
right.
Sensitive.
And so
snowflakes, I guess.
You really detested Tom Brady for years and years and years. And then something happened very recently. Explain to people why you had this change of heart.
Yes, I did have a... What is that Saul on the road to? I'm going to get this wrong, but I did have some sort of a conversion. If it was Saul on the road to Damascus, is that the parable from the Bible? I don't know, but I did also teach my two children to hate Tom Brady too. So I also indoctrinated them into the Bills hatred, even though they've never lived in Buffalo. But I started to change my mind, and it first started when Brady spurned the Patriots, and he signed with Tampa, because I lived down in St. Pete, of course, and him leaving the AFC East and leaving the Patriots. To me, that was a wonderful thing for him to do. I was thrilled. Immediately, I thought, okay, we might actually win the division with him gone. And sure enough, we did.
So you were happy as a matter of convenience. Like, he's out of your way now. He's, you know, you guys have a shot. That's why you at first were...
Yeah, and I thought, thank you. And it wasn't just me. I mean, even the mayor of Buffalo held a press conference, and he urged, it was right at the start of coronavirus when this happened, and he urged Buffalonians to celebrate at home. He's one of those mayors that Howie would hate, who's constantly hectoring people. And he was worried that Buffalonians were literally going to be partying in the streets when Brady left our division.
Wow. This runs deep. And then you also talk bit about the age factor. And because, Dave, you have books out. You're very into sports, specifically tennis. Tell people, first of all, the names of your books so they can find them. But what else did Tom Brady's age show you?
Okay, well, yeah. First of all, you go to my website, which is daveseminara.com, where I talk about a couple of the new books that I have coming out. But one of them is about traveling in the footsteps of Roger Federer in Switzerland. And Roger is my all-time favorite athlete. Love Roger. And he's turning 40 this year. So, and he and Brady are friends, too. Like, after the Patriots won last night. Ooh, that was a low blow. Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
after
we're still hurting.
After the Bucks won last night, Federer tweeted out a picture of him and Brady together, which said, age is just a number. So I love that. The fact that he can still win at 43 bodes well for Roger. And I got to admit, too, I'm a Generation X guy. I know you're a millennial. So, I'm 48. So I just love seeing someone who's in our, like, sort of forgotten generation succeed, because I know you millennials, Grace, you guys are taking over the world, and especially the world of sports. So I love a 43-year-old guy succeeding. I mean, even if he is Tom Brady. And he did it against the Chiefs, who just you know, decimated our hopes of getting to the Super Bowl. And they were very cocky, and they did a lot of trash talking and stuff like that when the Chiefs beat us. So there was just no way I was rooting for the Chiefs. No.
I'm going to read a little bit from your piece here. If people want to check it out, it's gracecurlyshow.com. But this was my favorite part. You said, "I now find myself seeing Brady in a new light. I'm grateful that he spurred Bill Belichick and the Patriots." You go on to talk a little bit about the division. "And he is 43, 5 years younger than me, and says he could play beyond 45 when his current contract expires. If he can do that, perhaps my all-time favorite athlete, Roger Federer, can do the same. Hell, perhaps I can, oh, I don't know, walk briskly around the block after dinner for decades to come." High hopes there, Dave.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to get carried away. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm so inspired by Brady that I'm going to go out there and run a marathon or something like that. But I do think you just have to be impressed by the guy. I mean, how does he keep doing this? No one in the world thought that he was going to win again when he signed with Tampa. I mean, people were kind of laughing about it, weren't they?
Yeah, no, they were.
All people saying in New England.
I specifically remember the day he announced it. And first, I was totally in denial. I did not think, you know, there's five stages of grief. And I thought, no, there's just no way. And then I was like, Tampa, ugh, why? And nothing against Tampa. I was just in a moment. And then I remember calling people and they were like, yeah, don't worry too much about it. I mean, he's so old at this point, and you know, with COVID and everything else, who knows when he's actually going to play or if he'll get very far. And I have to say, last night watching it, I was like, this is so cool, because it feels like a million years ago he actually left the Patriots. But I think it was such a gutsy move. I was one of the people who said, why wouldn't you just end it with the Patriots? Like, why wouldn't you just end it on a high note? But I do think it's cool that he was like, no, I'm going to try something else. And, you know, age is just a number. So I totally agree with you on that. I do have to ask you, though, a little bit, because I know you write politically sometimes. What do you think about the wokeness of the Super Bowl last night? Were you impressed by the commercials or the halftime show or Bruce Springsteen or any of that, or the mask wearing? What are your thoughts on that, Dave?
Oh, well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Grace, because I heard you guys, first of all, just to say, I heard you and Howie last week talking about Nancy Armour's column attacking Tom Brady's white privilege in the USA Today last week.
Yes.
Oh, could I just say, too, that was just another reason to root for Tom Brady. And I can't even believe I'm saying those words. A year or two ago, if you told me that I'd be rooting for Tom Brady, I would have laughed in your face. But, you know, Nancy Armour's talking about Tom Brady's white privilege. And if you haven't looked up her horrible column, don't give USA Today the click. Just find it elsewhere, like Fox News has covered it or whatever. But, I mean, all of these woke reporters, they hate him. They can't let that MAGA hat in the locker room go, even though it was 6 years ago. Regarding the wokeness of the actual game last night, answered your question, I have to be honest that I did not notice any of that, because I only just watched the football, and for a lot of the commercial, I either muted them or, like, took the opportunity to go get a snack or whatever. So I really only watched the football. So you'll have to fill me in on that.
Well, I do have to tell you that I saw one tweet, and I think it was an article from the Washington Post, and of course I can't find it right now, but it was wondering if we have to reconsider the name of the Buccaneers. Because it wasn't sure if talking about pirates is appropriate anymore.
Oh, God. Well, I did hear that there were a bus full of Native Americans who were protesting when the Chiefs arrived outside of their bus. And that really gets to me, too, because you don't name a sports team after something that you think is bad or weak or whatever. You're naming a sports team after a group because it's something positive, right? I mean, who would name their sports team something negative? I think Chiefs is I think it's a positive thing, because you name a sports team after someone who's brave or successful or whatever, right?
Right. And I think they've actually done polling amongst Native Americans, and they the greater majority of them think it's an honor or think it's cool that that there are names like that. But it's easier for the Karens to, you know, make their white guilt go away if they say, oh, no, we have to rename them, you know, the football team or whatever they're going to rename them. I did want to play you a little bit because I feel bad for you, Dave. You missed all this wokeness, and I just cannot let that stand. So I would like to play for you a little bit of Bruce Springsteen in his first ever commercial that was for Jeep. This is Cut 12.
It's no secret. The middle has been a hard place to get to lately. Between red and blue, between servant and citizen, between our freedom and our fear.
And you know,
oh, God.
You know what, Dave? We're going to play the second half just for you. This is cut 13.
We can make it to the mountaintop, through the desert, and we will cross this divide. Our light has always found its way through the darkness, and there's hope on the road up ahead.
It's so self-indulgent. It's like painful.
Oh, God. Did you do that to me just because the Bills beat the Patriots twice this year?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I had to punish you somehow. This is the best way I could come up with it. But I have to say, you just said that you never thought you'd be rooting for Tom Brady, right? And I was talking about this earlier in the show. I said, the left has a way of going so extreme and being so obnoxious about everything they stand for that it can turn you into fans of things that you were never a fan of. And like an example, I never cared about the name Buccaneers. I never was a huge Pirates fan. I didn't watch Pirates of the Caribbean. But now that they're trying to cancel Pirates, guess what? I'm rooting for the Pirates.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guess what? I know probably a lot of your listeners aren't tennis fans or Roger Federer fans, but you know, Roger got attacked by Greta last year on Twitter. I don't know if you ever heard about that, but Greta Thunberg. And by the way, I love it when you guys do her How Dare You, when you throw that into your show.
How dare
Greta,
you?
Greta, thank you. Greta was harassing Roger on Twitter last year because he's endorsed by Credit Suisse. And, of course, she thinks that Credit Suisse is destroying the rainforest somewhere, I think, or something on the slide. And thankfully, Roger didn't buckle. He did not distance himself from Credit Suisse as they were demanding that he do. But, yeah.
And that makes people bigger fans of I can't tell you the amount of celebrities who it's not like they've come out and support Trump, but just certain things they've done. I've said, you know what? You seem like a normal person. And now I like you, even though before I wasn't the biggest fan. Guys, I'm talking to Dave Seminara. Dave, tell everyone your website one more time.
It's just my name, DaveSeminara.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Dave has a lot of good pieces, talks a lot about cancel culture, a lot about sports. Very fun to read. He's a funny guy, so make sure you check that out. We'll be back on the other side with another funny guy, Howard Lawrence Carr. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato
chips. You'll get nothing and like it.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Should former President Trump still receive intelligence briefings?
I think not.
Why not?
Because of his erratic behavior. Unrelated to the insurrection.
Erratic behavior. You hate to see it. I'm not a fan of erratic behavior. Howie Carr is with us now. What's going on, Howie?
Nothing much. I'm just stockpiling all these. You know, I wait till we reach critical mass, and then I just write another column of just transcribing Joe Biden's erratic behavior.
Well, if you're going to do that, Howie, we might as well play another one for your files. Cut 8, this is Biden talking about Trump and the intel briefings.
I mean, you've called him an existential threat. You've called him dangerous. You've called him reckless.
Yeah, I have, and I believe it.
What's your worst fear if he continues to get these intelligence briefings?
He's also called him a sexist.
I'd rather not speculate out loud. I just think that there is no need for him to have that intelligence briefing. What value is giving him an intelligence briefing? What impact does he have at all, other than the fact he might slip and say something?
I find this hilarious that they're so worried about him, jeopardizing our security. We didn't get into a war in the 4 years that Donald Trump was president. Have they forgotten that, Howie?
Did he say an intelligent briefing? He sounds like Mayor Mumbles Menino when he talks about that. Mayor Mumbles Menino used to talk about the intelligent unit of the Boston Police Department.
Well, if that isn't hilarious enough, hearing Joe Biden talk about Trump's need for the intelligence briefings, then Clapper talking about it will really make you want to pull your hair out. This is Cut 9.
What's your fear if Donald Trump were to get intelligence briefings still?
Well, I think he's demonstrated a disdain for both the substance of intelligence as well as its protection. He's used it on occasion to weaponize it against political opponents.
Howie, am I crazy?
Again, projection.
They have no
pot
shame.
Pot calls kettle black.
These are the people who tried to orchestrate a coup to overthrow the duly elected president, and they're on TV with straight faces saying that Trump is a danger.
I know. And the other thing, and the thing about Clapper is he is even dumber than Brennan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think Brennan rises almost to the level of average intelligence. Clapper comes nowhere close to average intelligence. He's a boob. It's scary to think that he was a three-star general in the Air Force.
It really is. And I love the fact that now they're really pushing this because they never really got held accountable for their failed coup, Howie. And so they're back and they're bolder than ever before. This is Clapper Cut 10.
Potential financial entanglements, his debt, which to a normal person would be a real red flag for an adjudicator, somebody deciding on whether someone should have access to classified information. So for all those reasons, I think this is absolutely the right decision.
Absolutely the right decision. I mean, it's funny how...
I'm nothing like those adjudicators.
They're so addicted to Trump, though. All these networks are still, all they do is talk about Trump all day long. And when they're not talking about Trump, they're talking about how much they hate Tom Brady because he likes Donald Trump.
He doesn't wear a mask.
I know.
You know, I was thinking, when I saw that thing, they're mad at him for not wearing a mask. Did you notice when they had the cutaways to Russell Wilson, the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks?
With Roger Goodell?
He had to sit next to Roger Goodell.
Ugh, I know.
I mean, that's enough to make you start thinking suicidal thoughts 3 hours next to Roger Goodell under the best of circumstances. But then they put a mask on his face. You can't really tell all that much when you can't see somebody's mouth. But didn't Russell Wilson look incredibly miserable?
He looked, I really did notice the same thing, Howie. His eyes looked glazed over, like he was staring into the abyss. He wanted out of that box. I don't care how much free popcorn that was. He wanted out. Howie, did you change your mind at all once you saw Tom Brady without his mask on and all these people losing their minds? And maybe it wasn't so bad after all?
I'm Charlotte works for a branch of the Hunt family. I was rooting for the Chiefs because of her. But I'm not unhappy that he won, but the other thing, Grace, it was like the Patriots days with the refs being on their side. At first I thought, I'm the only one who's paranoid about this. These calls are all going against the Chiefs. But then I saw that Patrick Mahomes' mother, Travis Kelce's girlfriend, they were saying the same thing. I think everybody, it looked like the fix was in all over again. I mean, I know that the Bucs were going to win anyway, but it would have been a lot closer game if the refs hadn't have been throwing the flag every time it was fourth down for the Bucs.
Now, Howie, I know you don't want to talk about football too much. Who do you got on your show later today?
We got Paris Denard. He's one of he's good. We're just going to dump on the impeachment trial, I think. And then we've got some new stuff on the Undersecretary of Climate Science.
All right. Thank you, Howie Carr. Guys, this has been the Grace Curley Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow with another jam-packed show. Make sure you tune in for Howie. He's coming up next.